Barely Research Facts is a fact-based podcast brought to you by Art Now Das, an experiential arts agency based out of Mumbai. Each week, we pick a word at random, dive into it, and see what it brings to us. We are your hosts. My name is Ragini, and this is Shar. Let's go. Hi, guys, and welcome back. We're back with another episode of Barely Research Facts.
So do you want to tell them what our word is, Shar?
It's fire.
Yeah. This is also another crowdsource. Isn't this a crowdsourced word? Or did we come up with this all by ourselves?
It's all sort of merged into one, but if it is crowdsourced, thank you to whoever suggested it. yeah, it might have been crowdsourced. We had a trial run of the podcast episodes and we had a feedback review form, and I think someone suggested it there. So thank you.
Yes. I'm actually going to jump in with a phrase inspired by fire.
Okay.
I'm going to start by talking about the origins of how do we come up with the term "you are fired."
Oh, okay.
And why does being fired mean losing your job or losing someone's job? So one of those popular explanations for why we say that someone's, you know, fired when they lose their job is because if you go back to when civilizations were evolving and, you know, there was everyone in the community had to work and had to have some kind of a trade, so that because, you know, especially at a time when civilizations were dependent on barter systems, it was essential that everyone had something that they could barter so that they could contribute to the economy and to the ongoing of that civilization, right?
Yeah.
And if someone wasn't contributing, their existence within that community was sort of detrimental to the community. And so...
Goodbye, Jess.
Literally. They would just go and burn down their land and the house and they would be like, okay, and that's when you kind of found out that you weren't needed anymore.
Jeez, how did they have house and lands if they didn't have a job?
Maybe the dad was rich. Tale as old as time. Mm-hmm. Another explanation could possibly be that they could possibly refer to, you know, firing a bullet. So just the way a bullet was fired from a gun, you were fired from your job, I guess. So the most interesting explanation for how that "you are fired" came about is, according to legend, this phrase originated in the 1910s at the National Cash Register Company.
Okay.
Founder was a gentleman called John Henry Patterson, and he is apparently widely recognized as the pioneer of sales management.
Ooh.
And developing formal methods of training and assessing salespeople as back in the day. And obviously, genius manager, all of those things, but also extremely quirky, an absolute control freak. And typically, just somebody who has had multiple... I mean, now when people recount what he was like, there's stories about him just being really abusive and sort of excessive with his employees.
Yeah, but a great manager.
Yeah.
Hit all those KPIs.
including things like, you know, he would impose his personal values on his employees. He was a food and fitness fanatic and he would have his employees weighed every 6 months.
Oh God, I would so be fired.
Yeah, and so like stressful, right? Like it's bad enough having to lose weight, but having your job depend on it is just like, can't eat that cupcake today. And then sometimes he would just do things like fire an employee publicly for no reason at all. And then, you know, if he felt like they were just getting a bit cocky, and then hire them back when he thought that they tempered down.
And were desperate enough.
Yeah. And like really bizarre stuff. But one of the ways that he would, when he was genuinely like serious about firing an employee and he wanted to prove it, he apparently once dismissed an executive by asking him to visit a customer. And while he was on his desk and his belongings taken down into the company grounds, and when the employee came back, as he walked back into the ground, his desk was in front of him and it burst into flames.
What?
And he was therefore fired.
He sounds like a despot.
Yeah. And not only did he do this, he also famously fired NCR's star sales executive at the time, Thomas Watson Sr., who then went on to become the CEO for IBM. So bad decision on that front, I would say. But the reason was that Thomas Watson was, you know, he was arguing that NCR's dominant product, which was the mechanical cash register, would soon become obsolete. And he was proposing that NCR begin to start developing an electric cash register. Patterson was resisting the idea. They were having a conflict of
ideas.
Yeah, of the way forward. And at some point, he got really annoyed with him and warned him not to overstep his boundaries. This sort of exploded into an even bigger argument. And Patterson then dismissed Watson. And in a fit of rage, had his workers carry Watson's desk outside and had it lit on fire. And then told him, "You are now fired."
That seems to be a thing with him.
Yeah.
Wait, so this man is the pioneer of modern sales management techniques?
and training assessment methodologies.
So. Oh, fab. Okay, great.
Yeah. But we can also owe him thanks for the very interesting origin of the phrase, you are fired, and for The Apprentice thereafter.
I would have thought Donald Trump would have just like claimed the idea is mine.
So from there, the most not obvious beginning to the episode on the word fire. Really threw a spin in that one.
So I think Patterson was an early Western worshipper of Agni. Agni is the god of fire in Hindu scripture. And he is said to have 10 forms. So they're lightning, fire, sun, absorbing fire, destructive fire, fire yielded through sticks used for sacrifices and rituals, fire given to a student during his Upanayana ceremony, domestic fire used for household uses, southern fire of ancestors used for some types of rituals, and funeral fire in cremation rituals. So if you guys think that any kind of fire was missed out, can you jot it down, please, for us and let us know on Instagram or, I don't know, just let us know.
Write it to us.
Yeah. In Hindu scriptures, Agni is, this I quite liked. I thought this was like a lot of things in scriptures from that time. You know, they like to dot the I's and cross the T's because in Hindu scripture, Agni is mentioned to be present at all the important times during a human being's life cycle. During the birth of a person in the form of a diya, or a lamp, during prayers, again, lamps, or sacred fires, at weddings, when the bride and groom circle the sacred fire 7 times, and at death, when a person is burned at the cremation ground. So that covers all aspects again. So Agni is the big kahuna, basically. He's the boss. He's there at all times. Now, I wanted to talk about a little story that I discovered when I was researching Agni. This is the story of how he got indigestion. Bless him.
Oh.
Yeah. It's not just a human thing.
Was it very gassy?
Gods and mortals both have indigestion. yes. Is that a pun? Is that, do I detect a faint pun?
Yes, okay. And I totally lost you there for a minute, so I believe.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't describe the indigestion, but I can describe how he got it and how he fixed it. So, okay. In olden times, there was a bold and mighty king called Svetaki. He conducted different types of yajna, which are just rituals that are performed in front of a sacred fire with chanting. Afflicted by the unending dense smoke in the hall where he was performing these rituals, all the ascetics were like, we're out, Ibai. They left. And undaunted by this, Svetaki started another 12-year sacrifice in which not a single sage took part. The sages rebuked him and said if he wanted to conduct a sacrifice again, he could invite Ashudras to help him, which is a terrible thing to say even when the class system was prevalent. Bad ascetics. And just for context, for those who don't know, Shudras belong to the lowest caste among Hindus, and they're not generally allowed to participate in sacrifices. It's a terrible, terrible thing, and the class system has been abolished. Enraged by this insult, Svetaki went to Kailasha and did fierce penance, not just any kind of penance, fierce. And Lord Shiva appeared before him and gave him Durvasa as a priest for his yajna. So he got his wish. So for 12 years, this sage performed the yajna, pouring into the mouth of Agni through the sacrificial pit unlimited materials of food. Guess what happened? Agni was overfed and he got indigestion. He lost all appetite for food, bless him. What a terrible, terrible state. Became weak, yeah, and the brilliance of his face faded. Now, I quite like this idea because it's also sort of like a warning, isn't it? Like, don't go overboard, basically. Don't be like Svetaki. Don't go overboard because you will piss Agni off. He will get indigestion and then he will have to go jump through a lot of hoops to get rid of it. Speaking of jumping through a lot of hoops, this is the story of how he got rid of his indigestion. So when the indigestion continued without abate for some time, and by some time, I'm sure in the Vedas, it means like thousands of years, Agni approached Brahma and asked for a cure. So Brahma declared, obviously, things aren't very simple in this world.
In the world of the elements.
Yeah, Brahma was like, you can cure your indigestion, but you have to burn this huge forest called the Khandava forest, which is the abode of the enemies of the Devas, the gods. So Agni was like, okay, cool bro, and started trying to consume this forest. But the inhabitants of the forest soon quenched the fire. So disappointed, Agni went back to Brahma and said, what do I do? And so Brahma said, wait for some time, and this is where a prophecy is involved, till the advent of the Nar Narayanas to that forest.
Wow, that is a long time to wait to like get rid of a bit of gas.
Yeah. All this while, just imagine, over the rumbling in his stomach, Agni is listening to all these like convoluted ways of getting rid of his indigestion. So Brahma said the Nar Narayanas will help you burn the forest down. And so he waited patiently for them to come. At that time, the Pandavas, who are a familiar set of people in the Mahabharata, they were living in Indraprastha with Sri Krishna. When the heat became unbearable there, Arjuna and Krishna came to the banks of the river Yamuna. Hearing about the arrival of Krishna and Arjuna, who were none but the incarnations of Narayana and Nara, Agni disguised himself as a Brahmin, approached them and requested them to help him burn the Khandava forest down. He also added that any attempt of his to burn the forest was always foiled by Indra, who would send a heavy downpour of rain to quench the fire. And the reason was that Indra's bestie, Takshaka, was living in this forest, and so he refused to let it be burned down. So Agni, to gain his end, gave Arjuna an arrow case, which would never be empty, a chariot bearing a monkey flag, four white horses adorned with gold chains, and also the famous Gandiva bow. To Sri Krishna, he gave the Chakra Yudha, or the divine wheel weapon. And these are very important elements of the story of the Mahabharata. And this is where they got them from, basically. This is what led to them having these. When all of these were given to them, they helped him burn down the forest. Indra at once was like, no, my bestie, and sent down a heavy downpour of rain. But Arjuna created a canopy of arrows above the forest, and that prevented the rain from falling on the forest. Agni carried on his work undisturbed. The forest was burned, and Agni was cured of his indigestion.
And it only took about 5,000 years.
In estimation, circa.
Yes. This is fascinating. I did not know the story at all.
Yeah. I mean, I know that there are a lot of probably words and phrases that people who aren't familiar with the Mahabharata heard, but I recommend you go read the Mahabharata because it's an amazing epic to read.
Yeah, I haven't read the Mahabharata, but I would...
We studied it in school.
Did we?
Yes.
I feel like it's just something that I've just known my entire life.
I remember studying it in school.
I don't know how I just know it.
Yeah. But I think we were too young to understand the creativity and the length and breadth of, you know, how far it went.
Yeah, also it's a fascinating epic, right? Like when you just see the backstories of everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay, as long as no one's gassy any longer and everyone's happy. And
I don't know what happened to Indra's bestie, Takshaka. So, sorry, Takshaka, if you did perish in the fire.
You know what, I'm feeling bad, but I'm just like, in all of this, it was really not Agni's fault at all, because he didn't ask for anyone to do any penance for him. He didn't ask for anyone to, like, pray to him. This guy went overboard and, like, did it, and now he got stuck with this, like...
I feel like there are a lot of loose ends. So if there is an expert on the Vedas who can tell us what happened to all these loose ends that I have created, please do.
Yeah, we would like to know. Okay, so coming to fire that can be controlled through the mind. I actually decided to go and research pyrokinesis.
Okay.
Which is supposedly the psychic ability that allows a person to create and control fire with their mind.
What do you mean supposedly, Ragini? Have you not watched the X-Men? It is a thing. You will not take it away from
me. I do stand corrected. X-Men notwithstanding, but as with most other parapsychological phenomena, there is no conclusive evidence outside of movies and books and cinema that supports the actual existence of pyrokinesis.
Yeah.
Now, the word was popularized originally in 1980 by the horror novelist Stephen King in his book Firestarter, where he, you know, to describe the ability to create and control fire with the mind. But its use predates the novel, but it was popularized after this novel sort of came out and people just got more aware of it.
Yeah.
The word is intended to be a parallel to telekinesis, but according to another author of the time, S.T. Joshi, he describes it as a singularly unfortunate coinage, noting that the correct analogy to telekinesis would not be pyrokinesis, but would be telepyrosis, which is fire from a distance. Now, can it be done? Technically, no. Human brain waves generate hardly energy and definitely not enough to even light a fire. Regular human brain waves, let me put it that way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm.
You would be unlikely to even light a light bulb with your with the energy that your brain generates. Unlikely is what science says. No. However, that hasn't stopped people from claiming to be able to create and control fire just with the power of their mind. And back in 1882, there was a gentleman called A.W. Underwood, who was a famous magician of his time.
Yeah.
And he managed to convince everybody in a small town in Michigan that he had the ability to start fires with his thoughts. And he just became this overnight phenomenon, and everyone was like absolutely impressed with like, what is this guy? And there was a physician in the area who examined him and came away convinced that this was absolutely real. He even wrote his study up for the Scientific American, so that much. And the controversy just sort of raged. Lots of people were just like, look, guys, doesn't look likely. But lots of people were like, no, we've seen it, it's happening. Until 1883. So actually, it probably lasted like 1 year, because I think that was...
I mean,
not a very long time.
Yeah, that's a long time considering it was pyrokinesis.
But basically, around in 1883, there was another physician called Dr. R. Thomas who revealed a possible method for the trick, one that he himself had performed, which is basically that you store he would store phosphorus in his mouth near a gum, and then when he wanted to perform, he would hold a hanky to his mouth, seldom my own, he mentioned. And we'll find out why. And then he would spit the phosphorus into it, and then he'd rub the hank in his hands.
Yeah.
And then, boom, you'd have an ignition. Now, basically, phosphorus combusts at a temperature nearer to that of the human body. And so the little extra friction was all you really needed to cause it to ignite. And it's possible that Underwood used the same technique. And however, so this guy obviously got busted. But coming to a case of someone who did not get busted and has actually led a lot of people to, like, run around in circles. Back in 2011, a three-year-old girl in the Philippines, in one small town in the Philippines, was supposed to have had pyrokinetic abilities.
Wow, okay.
And apparently, yeah. So she was 3 years at the time. Her father was a tricycle driver. And they had gone into town to... He'd taken his daughter out for a small ride or whatever.
Okay.
And while he was alighting his tricycle, she looked at him and said, there will be a fire at 9 o'clock. And of course, I mean, you know, she's three, so he ignored the comment. At 9 o'clock sharp, the spare tire of his tricycle caught on fire with no apparent reason to. And bear in mind, he also mentioned that after this, he's like, his daughter does not know how to tell time yet. He and his wife do not own wristwatches. So they don't know how she said 9 o'clock, but 9 o'clock sharp, there was a fire. This continued because thereafter, the girl would just talk about fires and fires would allegedly happen around her. In fact, to the point where the mayor of San Jose went over to visit just to see how true this was. And as he walked into the house, she just turned around and said, something will burn. And within seconds, there was a shirt hanging in the house that caught on fire. Nobody touched it. Nobody was even close to it. It just started in seconds. The shirt was on fire, according to the mayor, in his words. The mayor then had to order the town's fire truck to be on standby in the village near their house. The family hut was secured by a yellow police line. And to this date, and of course, you know, just to be safe, they also had a psychic, an exorcist, and a charismatic movement leader join the shebang. But nobody can really tell. I mean, I don't know if she stopped
lighting
declaring
things
fires.
On fire. Okay. Yeah. Or maybe she just got really good with it.
And she was like, yeah, okay, let me just stop because you won't let me out of the house ever again.
Yeah. God, I'm just imagining a three-year-old running around putting slow-burning fuses on things. Like, just, oh, this one will last 9 hours. I'm going to go tell Daddy. Daddy, your shed's going to catch on fire at 8 p.m.
In 5-4.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah.
But kids, yeah, I think kids predicting things, kids pretending or... actually believing they can see ghosts, anything like that, I'd just be like...
It's the creepiest thing ever.
Yes.
I'm not sure I'd be able to keep that kid very long. You know?
Okay, so now we know why would Dragini disown a child. One of the reasons.
The paranormal. Yep. You see ghosts?
I think that's anybody's
threshold. Even the ghosts can hang out. I'm going out on my own. All right, yeah. So that is the story of pyrokinesis and the and two interesting incidents that may or may not be true. One, this is definitely possibly not true, and the second that I am strongly inclined to say is not true, but I don't know how.
Yeah,
that reveals more about me than the incident.
So, from controlling fire in a fictional way to actually controlling fire. So, one of the things that fascinates me is fire breathing or fire eating. Dragons have been an all-pervasive, interesting fictional element in stories, in folklore, in myths. And why not?
We can't go through an episode on fire without talking about dragons.
Yeah, exactly. So I was more interested in how they breathe fire, because obviously in different fictional histories, like, you know, in different books, in like, say, Lord of the Rings or
Game of Thrones, Harry Potter,
you know, some of them explain the science behind breathing fire, or they just get into the actual interesting bits of like,
where they're just burning everything down.
Yeah, just destruction. I found an interesting article. So one of the things that fascinates people is how they breathe fire. How do these dragons do it? These fictional animals, how do they do it? So I found an interesting article that describes different ways in which this could possibly happen. So fire has three basic needs: something to ignite the blaze, fuel to keep it burning, and oxygen. And the last ingredient is oxygen is obviously the easiest thing to find. It's abundant in the Earth's atmosphere. But how do you spark the flame? How do you fuel it enough so that the dragon can create this impressive flame burp?
Flame burp?
Burp, yep. So one of the researchers quoted in this article is Frank Van Brooklyn. He's a biologist at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas. So he theorizes that if a dragon had an organ like a bird's gizzard, it could store swallowed rocks. And how does this make sense? Because all it takes to strike a spark is flint and steel. There's steel inside this dragon that has a gizzard that stores rocks. So if the spark was close enough to a very sensitive fuel, that might be enough to ignite it. Where's this fuel, Van Brooklyn?
Yeah. Okay. I think it's good, safe to say that we leave the details of it to the experts. Yeah. We are clearly struggling.
Yeah. As far as I can see in the article, there's a hole in that theory. But coming to pyrophoric molecules. So what are they? Pyrophoric molecules burst into flame the instant they contact air. Now, for instance, says Rachel Burks, she's a chemist in Austin, Texas, the element iridium burns different colors when it becomes part of various molecules. So one of them could burn a warm orange, red, or even violet blue, which is one way to explain how Game of Thrones, like the ice dragons, the zombie ice dragons, have blue flames coming out of their face. Ooh. But the snag with that theory is, which would obviously be a snag in the fictional universe as well, is that iridium isn't common, especially in biology. There's lots of cool elements on the periodic table, she says, but living things only use a few. There are other pyrophoric chemicals that a dragon might find a little closer to home, more abundantly. Matthew Hartings, who's a chemist at the American University in Washington, D.C., says if you live amongst a bunch of rocks, you have access to a high amount of iron. How does iron help? Iron reacts with hydrogen sulfide, which smells like rotten eggs, I'm sure we all know. It's found in crude oil. When hydrogen sulfide and iron get together in a rusty oil pipe, for example, the result is iron sulfide. And if iron sulfide is exposed to air, it is explosive. So that's one of the ways. Mm. But now there's a lot of theories about gases. But unfortunately, gases are difficult to control. They expand to fill any available space. To keep it contained, they, meaning the dragons.
Being a really burpy, farty dragon.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine?
No, I was not imagining that to be correct.
Yeah, can you imagine how embarrassing? Oh, I wanted to breathe fire, but I farted it instead. So gas is not the greatest solution. So you'd have to really compress it in order to store it well enough to use it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like you basically have to have like an aerosol can in somebody's tummy.
Yeah. I like your... I like... I like the comparisons, the lines you're drawing.
Yeah, burping, farting, aerosol
can. Yeah, just swallow an aerosol can.
And then I don't know how you press the button and get the thing out, but yeah.
Yeah, this is all very, you know, highly scientific discussion. If anybody wants to join in, please do. So one of the theories that I found most believable, because my little brain could understand it, is that dragons could have two sacs with holes that enter into their mouths. Inside one sac lives an organism, like yeast, that produces ethanol. Inside the other lives bacteria that produces sulfuric acid. These two gases are allowed to mix inside the dragon's mouth just before it breathes fire. So I like that. I like that there's two sacs.
Simple explanation.
Yeah, with like tiny living organisms that are like, okay, you want to breathe fire now? Okay. Produces ethanol. Produces sulfuric acid. It must really stink though inside the dragon's mouth. Which is, I think...
Yeah, I'm sure dragons don't have...
qualms about not make a bad breath.
Yeah. Like, I think morning breath would just take a different...
Yeah, if I could breathe fire, level I'd up. Take morning breath. It's fine. So yeah, that's how dragons breathe fire, with many holes in many theories.
Yeah, we just solved it. Going from the very real ways in which fictional creatures could be breathing fires to going to fires that have just completely baffled people in real life. And apparently, there was a series of fires from 2004 to 2005 in Caneto di Caronia region in Sicily, where there were just multiple fires just kept popping up all the time and nobody knows why to date.
Like above ground?
Yeah, above ground. Like people's TVs, houses, plug points would just catch on fire. So the fires began in December 2003, where there was one of the villagers' television sets just caught on fire randomly. And nobody, like, he just didn't know why and it was just on fire. And then thereafter, similar malfunctions started being reported across the village. So people's fuse boxes, air conditioners, kitchen appliances, computers, car door locks, like anything was just catching on fire.
Okay.
Fires were supposed to have, you know, was apparently striking bedding presents and pieces of furniture. And at least one person said that they had observed an unplugged electrical cable ignite when he was directly observing it. On February 9th, 2004, two houses in the region burned. And in response, they basically evacuated 39 of the residents from their homes to the town's only hotel. The Italian power utility at this point cut power to the town, but the fires continued. And from January through March, 92 fires were reported, cause for which is just still unknown.
Hey, Ragini, do you think there was any sightings of a three-year-old running around?
On March 16th, again, the fires resumed. And investigators now reportedly witnessed malfunctions in compasses, electronic car locks, and cell phones. By April, the situation had gotten so dire, the government formed an interdisciplinary research group. And the team had cooperation apparently from the nation's armed forces, the police, you name it, and every government entity was involved in just trying to solve these unexplained fires.
Mm.
The team reported anomalous electromagnetic activity, unexplained lights, and a helicopter that experienced allegedly anomalous rotor damage out of the blue. Scientists from the National Research Institute, with support by NASA physicists, were also involved in investigating the event. So really, this blew up, like after a point. Yeah. Finally, in June 2004, they gave up and they were like, the residents came back home. Events, explanations now have ranged from the mundane to the paranormal, obviously, because why not? Public speculation is attributed to the... Close, poltergeists, demons and UFOs. In 2007, it was proposed that the phenomena could likely be caused by intermittent electromagnetic emissions. On June 24th, 2008, following further investigation, the case was dismissed because they just could not figure it out. And in conclusion, they just have now said, yeah, it was arson. These were cases of arson, but they have not been able to name any people responsible for it. So that's where it's at. I mean, basically, they just want to shut the file because they don't know. And everybody wanted to come back home and nobody wanted to think about it anymore.
Oh, God.
But to date, they don't know what actually caused these random fires and if they're ever going to happen again.
Cool. Well, not cool for the people. Cool for mystery buffs.
Yeah, and that is the story of the mysterious fires of Caneto di Caronia.
So, speaking of mysterious fires, except this time, not on inanimate objects. So, let me tell you the story of Matilda Rooney. Late at night on Christmas Eve in 1885, in the small farming town of Seneca, Illinois, a woman named Matilda Rooney burst into flames.
Ow.
Yeah. She was alone in her kitchen when it happened. The fire quickly incinerated her entire body except her feet. And while this story is tragic, the illustration that goes along with it in the article that I'm reading is comical to say the least. It's just a singed silhouette of a person on a wing back armchair with just smoke coming out of her shoes. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing this hard. Poor Matilda Rooney, she was found in her kitchen, but the incident also claimed the life of her husband, Patrick, who was found suffocated from the fumes in another room of the house.
Oh, dear.
Obviously, the tragedy left investigators baffled. They couldn't find any signs of foul play. The Rooneys had only been relaxing and drinking whiskey that evening. And witnesses prior to the incident, a couple of hours before, hadn't noticed anything out of the ordinary. There was no fuel that could possibly have ignited it. It was only restricted to where she was sat on, you know, where she was in the kitchen. The flames were intense enough to reduce Matilda to ashes and a few fragments of bone. And the fire hadn't spread to the rest of the room. It seemed to have started in her body and stayed confined to her body.
Wow.
Yeah. So, unexplained, completely unexplained. That spontaneous human combustion has fascinated me for years. So it's been used in books, in movies, in records of unexplained incidents throughout history, though there haven't been as many cases as I would have thought there would be. I thought there'd be like hundreds upon hundreds or thousands, but there haven't been as many. Spontaneous human combustion dates back to the 17th century, with a large number of cases recorded in the 19th century, which is, you know, where there was like sort of like spiritual interest in spiritual things or the unexplained. So that would explain why the records, so many of the incidents recorded happened in the 19th century. A handful have happened in the 20th and another handful in the 21st century. It's been used in books by authors such as Herman Melville, Charles Dickens, Gogol. Charles Dickens was actually an interesting case because in his book Bleak House, a sleazy alcoholic junk merchant, Mr. Crook, who ended up as a heap of ashes on the floor and, quote, a dark greasy coating on the walls and ceiling. In the preface of his book, he defended the use of spontaneous combustion because people at the time, obviously, there were a lot of people who were also, you know, saying that it was trash. Please stop talking. Please stop promoting rubbish in your books. But he defended his use of it against accusations of implausibility, citing several famous cases and the judgments of eminent medical doctors that such a thing was indeed possible. He said, "I shall not abandon the facts until there shall have been a considerable spontaneous combustion of the testimony on which human occurrences are usually received." So, does it really happen is the question, and
yeah.
I'm leaning towards no, and so are experts, which makes me a very intelligent person, I'll tell you. Also, when things were happening in the 19th century, they obviously didn't have all the scientific facts in place. The victims of all of these combustions were generally alcoholic and overweight, and more were female than male. So there was a general perception that it was kind of retribution for a debauched lifestyle. Obviously, you know, you've got to bring God into this.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
This idea was reinforced by lurid newspaper accounts of suspected cases. It made intuitive sense, after all, that a body saturated with a flammable substance, alcohol, would become flammable. Is that possible, really? No.
I hope not.
No, yeah. Emphatic no. None of the proposed scientific explanations for how a body would spontaneously burst into flames have held up to scrutiny, mostly because a lot of the theories rely on outdated medical ideas like bodily humors and things like that. So, by virtue of relying on false facts, quote-unquote facts, they're just like in the trash. The Victorian explanation that alcohol rendered the body flammable doesn't work, seeing that the concentrations of alcohol in even the most intoxicated people are much too low and that an external source of ignition would be required. In the 20th century, an interesting phenomenon called the wick effect was discovered, in which clothing worn by a victim can soak up melted fat acting like the wick in a candle and creating conditions for a body to smolder for an extended period of time. So this would probably be where the alcohol and the incapacitatedness came into play. But experiments have shown that this effect can produce many of the unusual characteristics associated with spontaneous human combustion, such as the complete or nearly complete incineration of the body and the lack of fire damage to the victim's surroundings. The likely explanation for suspected cases of spontaneous human combustion is that there is an external source of ignition, like a match or a cigarette or something they were doing at the time. For instance, Matilda was in the kitchen, but there's a lot of chance of flame happening there. The reason that it's so unexplained is that the reason for the ignition is burned in the fire that it creates. So that's the story. There are a few hundred cases, so a lot of them could be put down to just paranoia or just trying to create a story where there isn't one. But mostly it should be explainable by science.
So reassuring.
Yeah.
So for the last segment for this podcast, so I'm going to talk about what happens to flames in space. According to experiments on the International Space Station, it shows that fire in space can be less predictable and potentially far more lethal than it is on Earth. Now, why does this happen? This happens because, so on Earth, okay, when a flame burns, it heats your, you know, this, okay, basic science that people all learned. It basically heats the surrounding.
Okay, let's pretend we know.
Yeah, but I will repeat it for everybody else just because, you know, I'm considerate. So basically a flame will burn and it will heat the surrounding atmosphere, which causes the air to expand and become less dense. So now the lighter air moves upwards and gravity pulls the colder, more dense air to the base of the flame. And this sort of allows fresh oxygen to come to the fire and just allows it to burn till it's out of fuel, right?
Okay.
Now in space, there is no gravity. So what happens when you have a flame burning, but there is no pull of gravity? Without gravity, the hot air will expand, but it won't move upward. The flame will persist because the diffusion of oxygen with random oxygen molecules that are drifting into the fire. But the upward flow of the hot air is absent. And therefore, fires in space are not, they don't have the sort of typical, you know, the kind of
shape.
Flame that, yeah, that we're used to in, on Earth. It's more like dome-shaped or spherical. And it's a lot more sluggish. So the oxygen flow is far more meager. The flame tends to be a bit more sluggish. So therefore, if you ignite a piece of paper in space, the fire will just slowly creep along from one end to the other. And, you know, it just lasts a much longer time. Now, the reason why this is dangerous is because a flame in microgravity is capable of surviving on less oxygen and burning for far longer periods of time.
Okay.
And yeah, and so that's how fire and flames react in space without gravity. Because you still have all the ingredients necessary to start a fire.
Yeah.
But you just don't have gravity playing a role in it.
Cool.
And also, just to add to the fun of it, your regular fire extinguishers that squirt gases at flames are less effective than they are here because since they direct air and oxygen to the fire and therefore they're not burning out the fire, they're just kind of giving it more fuel to burn further and forevermore.
Wow. So, do not want to... I mean, I know that fire is a huge risk on spaceships, obviously, for obvious reasons. But I might have seen a couple of movies as well. But just dome-shaped fire? Jeez, no thank you.
It'd be cool.
Put it down like as one more reason not to be an astronaut.
Yes. Okay. And with that, that's the end of the episode now.
Oh, I'm sad.
Yeah, because we had some really fun ones with this.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like really wise at the end of this. Like, I feel we've tackled the paranormal, we've tackled like space, we've tackled,
Yeah, hopefully it won't last too long.
And yeah, on that note, follow us on Instagram. We are on Barely Research Facts. And listen to the podcast, tell your friends and family, and we will see you next time. Okay, that's it for today. The episode you just heard was edited by Mohit Chandilya. Music for the episode is by Charita Arora. If you'd like to reach out to us about the podcast, the episode, or you just want to say hi in general, we're on Instagram as Barely Research Facts. You could also come to the website at www.artnowdoes.in. If you like the podcast, review, subscribe, and please share it with other podcast lovers in your circle. It would mean so much to us. Until next time, bye.